Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Welcome to the Project Zion podcast, friends. This is the start of a new series that we are calling What's Brewing, where we will discuss mission around the church. Have you started a new ministry in your area? Have you felt called to start something new? Are opportunities abounding in your daily life? If so, drop us a message here at Project Zion, and we might just call you up for an interview. We would love to hear your stories. Hello, and welcome to the Project Zion podcast. I'm your host, Carla Long, and today I'm joined by Ryan Pitt, a full-time minister for Community of Christ, and doing something quite, I would say, different and interesting for the church. And I'm super excited to talk to him about it. Welcome to the podcast, Ryan. Thanks for being on.
Thank you for having me, Carla. This is really exciting.
It is exciting, Ryan. It is. Ryan and I have actually been talking for the last 45 minutes. And I'm like, Ryan, we have to get to this podcast. So he's really fun to talk to. And I'm really excited he's on here. So Ryan, tell us about yourself.
Sure. So I am the Mid-Atlantic Mission Center president, and I've been in this role for almost 2 years now. I'm still learning. I joked with people that year one was my first rookie year. Year two was my second rookie year. So I'm real excited to start my third rookie year with the Mission Center. But it's great. I moved to the East Coast in 2012 after I graduated from Graceland. I lived in the Washington, D.C. area. I worked on my master's in health administration at the time. And while I was there, I was invited to participate in the Leading Congregations in Mission pilot program with the Washington, D.C. congregation. And it was that experience that introduced me to Deer Park and ultimately the Mid-Atlantic Mission Center. So I was able to establish some relationships early on there. And when I saw the job posting, I saw, well, this seems to be a really good opportunity. I know some of the folks. I'm at least aware of some of their challenges that their congregations are facing. So let's give it a shot. And when the program ended, I was able to jump on board as the Mission Center president, which was really cool. So that's a little bit about the history that brought me up this way.
Well, yeah. You lived in Washington, D.C., right?
I did. I had the privilege of living in the parsonage after Emma, my wife, and I got married. We lived there for a few months, and then Kevin Bryant had started as a pastor there, so he and his family moved in. And at the time, we were all living in that house together. The Bryants were upstairs, and the Pitts were downstairs for about a month or two before we made our move to Pennsylvania in, I'd say, my wife would know better than I would, probably May of 2016.
Oh, wow. I've never actually been to that congregation, but I've heard amazing things, like it's on Diplomat Row or something like that.
Yeah, they would refer to it as Embassy Row because you've got all these embassies going down the road, Massachusetts Avenue. Embassy Row is not only reflective of multiple nations around the globe, but there's multiple houses of worship that you're able to experience and see what it's like. And they have a great unity walk every September in response to the 9/11 attacks in New York City. So it's a wonderful community. We appreciated our time there. And my time in Washington has really helped me for my time in New York City. And I'm sure we'll get to that here in a little bit.
So I find Washington, D.C., I think that would give you some sort of like different kind of perspective than you might have had growing up. So what a gift for you to get to live in D.C. and kind of have a different kind of idea of how the government works and how religion plays a role in that. So that's pretty cool.
It is. And I probably should have mentioned this, but I grew up in Lamoni, Iowa, and I graduated with 28 people in my class. if that puts any frame of reference to my time growing up. So I was expecting the heavier traffic when I moved to DC, but I was not expecting the idea of paying for parking and these tolls. It was just a whole new world.
Yes. Lamoni has a deep and wonderful place in my heart, and I totally understand growing up in a town of 600 myself. So I totally get that. So Ryan, what do you love most about your job? And if you want to talk about New York City and the ministry that's happening in New York City, I would love to hear about that. Like how that got started, if that is part of what you love most about your job.
Yeah. So what I love most about my job is also one of the greatest challenges. I'm just one person, and it's very hard to get to all of the congregations and to be involved with everything. And you know, like I experienced in year one, I was doing a lot of traveling, not a lot of time at home, which was really challenging. So I had to relearn how to do mission. How do we live who we claim to be? And yeah, sometimes that's on Sunday mornings through wonderful worships and celebrations. But it really got me thinking about how do we think outside of the box here and live as a congregation outside of church. My time with leading congregations in mission was a catalyst for that kind of thought. So the greatest part of my job is working with these congregations, getting to know who they are, what they want to do, what's their dream, what's their vision. But it's challenging to have all of my fingers in each of those efforts. But it's a very relational job. I get to spend time with the pastors. I'm lucky that technology is what it is now, that we're able to rely on phone conferences and teleconferences like Zoom. So it's made the time getting from place to place a little bit more manageable, but it never replaces that face-to-face, sitting right next to the person interaction that I'm incredibly passionate about.
Well, sure. And it's a really big area. Is that true?
Yeah. So the Mid-Atlantic Mission Center is eastern Pennsylvania, the southeastern rim of New York State, going all the way out into Long Island, a little tip of western Connecticut, all of New Jersey, and all of Delaware.
Yeah, that's quite a bit.
Yeah. I wasn't expecting Pennsylvania to be as big. Coming from Iowa, I thought it was about the same size. But as I was driving from York, Pennsylvania to Scranton, Pennsylvania, where the office supposedly takes place, I realized how long of a drive that was.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. So it's great. I appreciate the challenges. We've got lots of wonderful people out here who are passionate and we're working on the vision together.
Well, that's cool. And I really like what you had to say about how do we live who we claim to be. And that really is a really solid LCM idea. And maybe you should talk a little bit about for our listeners what LCM is and what it means to you.
Yeah, so LCM, and feel free to jump in at any point, Carla, but LCM, or Leading Congregations in Mission, was a 3-year pilot program the church offered for congregations within the U.S., Europe, and in Australia. I don't know if Canada was part of that. I would assume so. But anyway, we were able to send some representatives. Now, at the time, I was with the D.C. congregation. We went up to Deer Park and started thinking about this idea of mission and what it means to be a missional people. And it was challenging for the congregation because while we had some wonderful activities going on within our congregation itself, we had some great groups and organizations using our building throughout the week. It challenged us to think outside of the box, and we realized, you know, there's so much more that we could be doing if we did it a little bit differently. And so LCM became, I think I used the word catalyst, became that catalyst to think and to reshape the way we live as a congregation. Now, one of the challenging parts of that was this group that went to Deer Park, we were able to learn and be part of those conversations. But then we had to bring it back to the rest of the congregation. And so we had to integrate some of the spiritual practices that we've learned, such as dwelling in the Word, or walking the neighborhood, which is a wonderful spiritual practice in the DC area. And now up here, living in the New York City metro, that too is a wonderful practice. But integrating these wonderful ideas into a way that it means that makes sense to the rest of the congregation, that they're able to grasp the idea, and then think, you know what, maybe there's something more we can offer than just a Sunday morning celebration. What if we started a English as a second language effort, which was one of the things the DC congregation did, which was a wonderful thing. And it, you know, this is a whole another topic, but it started off slow, but it started to branch out and people became interested within the neighborhood, and it became a wonderful, wonderful and relational activity. We built on those relationships and we were able to invite folks to worships. We invited them to congregational activities such as a chili cook-off that we had started in January of 2015, I think. So it's just a LCM became a systematic way to thinking about mission. You learn the ideas, you talk about it, you implement it back in your congregation, and then at a next retreat, and I think there are about 7 retreats in total, at the following retreat, you were able to talk about, you know, what did you do? What did you learn? And we were able to talk in a communal setting with multiple congregations established and in that circle. And it was talking to the congregations that really got me excited about the idea of working with the Mid-Atlantic Mission Center, hearing what they were doing, how they were reaching out, and what wasn't working, why some people were hesitant while others were already on board, and it didn't take a lot of picketing or advocacy work to bring them along. So it was just a radical approach to something that we need to be doing. That was a really long segment, so I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry. I find that really exciting. And I think one of the things you said is, I mean, I think you said a lot of very true things, but one thing that you said is about, you know, learning all about LCM is one thing and getting excited about it is one thing, you know, like these spiritual practices, a way to understand more deeply who God is, but bringing it back to a larger group of people who did not have that initial experience is a really difficult situation, actually, because they, you know, they might be wandering around the neighborhood or walking the neighborhood and they're like, what are we doing? This is weird. You know, like that could be a very easy place to get into, or like, why do we keep talking about the same scripture over and over and over again? I just want to move on. So that bringing that back and helping people learn how to deepen those spiritual practices is not an easy task. And it sounds like that you guys have done a really great job of that.
Yeah. And I'll leave the Chesapeake Bay Mission Center president to talk about their stuff. But we've had some really wonderful things flourish and begin to reveal itself out of this, out of the LCM model. In fact, one of our congregations in southern Pennsylvania just had a mission retreat a few weeks ago. It was really started by the core pastoral team that went to Deer Park during the LCM retreats. But their approach to bringing it back and integrating it into congregational lifestyle was through this mission retreat where we said, okay, hey, what are the needs in our area, and how can we best utilize our resources to meet those needs? This is the second year they've done this retreat. I unfortunately was not able to attend. I was in Independence for Seminary's Focus Week, but they went ahead, and our invitational support minister was there to talk through some things. So it's just a really, I get excited when the rest of the congregation gets excited about it. for me, that's a success. It's hard to quantitate ministerial success as a mission center president who has to manage administrative responsibilities. And quantitating ministry is something I'm incredibly interested in. And this is a way I can see those leading congregation and mission efforts produce or reveal themselves in a local jurisdiction such as this congregation in Pennsylvania.
So that's for sure. You know, there's, if people get excited about something, if people in the congregation get excited about something, then you're golden, you know, because right. They're going to continue to be excited about that. And what I've learned about LCM and what I've experienced in LCM is that once that initial hump is, people are over that initial hump, it is like so much fun to, and I'm using air quotes, go to church. And it is so much fun to be missional. Yeah. And it doesn't even feel like you're doing any of those things. It just feels like you're living your life in a way that God is calling you to live your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something that I've been working with our youth out here. I've introduced the idea of, you know, in addition to going to church, what if we did church? What if church, rather than being a place in one stationary location, what if it became a verb? How can we church in our life? How do we bring that same message we may hear on a Sunday morning, that same joy that comes with sharing good news, that same expression of emotions that come with sharing prayer concerns? What if we were able to take that that moment, that space, and internalize it on a Tuesday afternoon after school? How would things be a little bit different? How would we see church differently? How would Community of Christ be a different church? So those are the things that really get me excited. And it's a way that, in my mind, things need to go. And I'm relatively young for a Mission Center president. I'm only 28 years old. And so I see what some of my peers outside of the church, what they struggle with, what they do. And the ministerial needs out there haven't changed, have not decreased. The need is still there for intentional community and building relationships and worship and growing and learning and experimenting and learning how to apply what you did wrong in different ways, all in the name of proclaiming Christ. But that need is still there. But with how busy our weekends become, with lacrosse tournaments on Sunday mornings, and believe me, being a Lamoni graduate, lacrosse is not really in my vocabulary. Definitely an East Coast thing. But we need to learn how to adjust and meet people where they are, bringing the church to them.
I really love what you had to say about how can we church in our life, you know, and changing that. I was a math major, so I totally don't understand English very well. And, you know, verbs and nouns. But I totally understand that. Like changing the word church to a verb is something that we can understand. Like, how can you church wherever you are? And there are some people I know that are allergic to the word church. I understand that too. But you said, you know, the need is not decreased. I would say the need has increased for intentional community. You know, like it's just so easy to supposedly communicate with people on your phone through text or Messenger or Skype or Zoom or whatever. It's so easy to connect with people. And yet you might walk away and sometimes or many times walk away from that experience feeling even more lonely. Like no one has actually really heard you. So that intentional community, it takes time and it takes effort and it takes people like you who want to kind of shepherd that and make it happen, but it is just so desperately needed.
Absolutely. And what you said there, you know, the social media and with text messaging and, you know, carrying the internet in our pockets, you know, that is wonderful. I'm able to connect with pastors, but it's not the same. There is this it's almost superficial when it happens on Facebook. Yeah, you're seeing pictures or whatever, but when you sit down and you're talking to someone over a cup of coffee or tea or whatever, and you enter into a space that's meaningful, and it becomes transformational. You walk away from that space differently. A wonderful example that our youth out here talk about all the time is their trip to Spectacular at Graceland University in Lamoni. There are very, very few quote unquote church services, but the whole week is a moment of worship. It's celebration. It's bringing God into a basketball game. It's celebrating talents and gifts and building on those talents and gifts to create leaders. And it's an incredibly powerful, powerful time for youth. It's powerful for me as a camper. But even now, as I go back as a staff member for the North Atlantic delegation, it's very unique in its own way and mysterious, but at the same time, that same thing that happens at Spec, the same thing that happens at Deer Park, our campground, the same thing that happens on a Sunday morning worship in our congregation can happen outside of those places. We just need to be intentional about the way we approach it.
Ryan, I know that I'm like a zillion years older than you, but I really feel like we're twins because I say these words all the time. So thank you for saying them. I appreciate that somebody else agrees with me. You know, I love that. So I'm going to change the course of the conversation just a little bit because I've heard about a pretty awesome ministry that's happening up in New York City. But before we jump into that, you had a GoFund mission. The church donated money for your GoFund mission. Project Zion also had a GoFund mission, and it was just incredible to be supported by the different people in the World Church. And I was wondering, so you're using GoFund mission money to provide this ministry in New York City, is that right?
That's right. And if I can push back a little bit, Carla, this is actually the perfect segue into this conversation about going into a space intentionally with expectation that the Spirit is already there and with us. Same thing that happens at our campgrounds and at Spec. That will happen in a coffee shop. But before I get there, the GoFund mission effort was incredible. I met with leaders within the Mid-Atlantic Mission Center in December of 2016 to do some what I called strategic missional planning. And we were looking at some of the strengths of our mission center, some of the opportunities, our interests, in preparation for the coming year. And so at that time, we identified some of the incredible opportunities within our mission center include cities such as Philadelphia and New York City. Philadelphia has two congregations that are relatively close. That's Woodbury on the New Jersey side and Humeville over on the Pennsylvania side. And we have members within the city who are able to get to those two congregations with ease. But when it came to New York City, there was a disconnect. The nearest congregation is in Ridgewood, New Jersey, which is where my wife Emma and I live, and our 11-year-old dog Henry. So we live in Ridgewood, but we knew that there were church members, connections, and friends that lived in the New York City area within the five boroughs. So at the strategic planning retreat, we identified as New York City being one of those places where some incredible ministry can take place. We just quite sure we didn't know what it was going to be or what it was going to look like. Around that same time, a couple weeks later or so, Apostle Locke Mackay contacted me and said, "Hey, GoFund mission is launching. Do you see any way how the New York City opportunity and the GoFund mission imperative can merge? Is there a way that, you know, we can put a project together? So I went to my Mission Center counselors and we talked about it. We said, is this something that we want to do? It's going to take a lot of time, a lot of energy, but there might be, you know, a little interest out there in the church. So we made the decision, let's go ahead and do it. And we, with the help of Richard Betts, we were able to put together this really cool video that talked about our vision for New York City ministry. Now, if we have any listeners in New York, I'm sure they will confirm that the cost of living and rental space can be pretty expensive. So it doesn't really make sense for us to build a church in New York City right now, nor does it really make sense for people living in the five boroughs to take the train all the way up to New York, which can easily be a 2.5-hour trip one way, costing about $30 per person for a round trip. That just didn't make sense. So we used the ideas that we learned in leading congregations and mission, some of the programming, some of the ideas, some of the spiritual practices that we used in the Washington, D.C. congregation. And we thought, how will those translate in the New York City environment? So we're taking the church to the city. We're making, you know, I think the video talked a little bit about using park benches as pews, using coffee shops as houses of worship. So we're rethinking the way in which we meet. We're rethinking the way in which we interact and build relationships. We're rethinking the way in which we worship. And so that was the vision of the project, and we let it go, and we thought, okay, well, let's see where it goes. And we set a goal of $5,000. But by the end of the project, we'd raised about $10,000 total for our efforts in New York, which was incredibly exciting.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah.
That is really exciting. So, and that was you said the whole process started December 2016.
December of 2016, yep. And then the project launched January of 2017. Concluded about partway into February. And so by March 2017, we had money to use within the city. And, you know, people ask, you know, what was the money for? What do you plan on doing? We wanted to make life easier to meet up, right? It's an expense to get from one place to another. As well-connected as the New York City metro is, it's great, but it does come at a cost, and we were hoping that the funds that we'd raise could help alleviate some of those expenses, which it has. And we've been able to meet in coffee shops, we've been able to meet outdoors in just random park spaces. We even took a field trip per se to the World Trade Center Museum and Memorial, which was a really powerful experience. Some time has passed since the attacks, but we were able to go there and experience it somewhat as a group, but also individually. People kind of went their own ways. And so after visiting the museum, we went out for ice cream to help bring our blood sugar levels back up. And we were able to talk, you know, what did you experience? What did you feel? What do you remember from the day? And how has your experience at the museum shaped the way you might remember from 2001? Where was God in this? Where do you think God was? Was God in midst of this? How do you reconcile this? How do you reconcile, you know, some people thinking this way while others have a completely different philosophy about it? So it was just one, in my mind, one of the most radical worship experiences I think I've ever had. as edgy as it can be or even seem, it was a powerful moment where this group, where we'd been getting together for a little bit, but that was the turning point in, dare I say, our congregation's life. It was a moment just to understand each other and to dive deeper than just the superficial stuff. It was really, you know, I wish you could have been there, Carl. I think you would have had some incredible insight on things. But it was just a powerful moment for us.
I mean, yeah, I wish I could have been there too, just because it sounds like an incredible moment. And what a gift that you could give to those people and to you as well, you know, to be able to process something that maybe no one has ever really processed with them before in that kind of way. So you say it was a turning point, and I know you use the term congregation probably a little bit loosely, but do you have that core group of people that you meet with, and what is it, how often do you meet, and what do you do when you meet usually? I'm just curious about what this whole thing looks like. I run a house church in Utah County, and it's not easy to start, you know, kind of from scratch. And so I'm curious about where you're at.
It's very challenging. Just the nature of the city, people can be working two or three part-time jobs on top of school or whatever. And schedules are very, very difficult to align. Once in, dare I say, a blue moon, we're able to figure out a time when, yes, we can get together. So we do rely a lot on social media, text messaging saying, hey, you know, what can we do this month? It would be, ideally, in my mind, it would be great if we're able to get something established once a month. But with the nature of people's daily lives, it can be challenging. So we're hoping to move towards a more established routine or model going forward. In October, we had a Bible study in a coffee shop. And this wasn't a coffee shop that was that isolated booths or whatever. We were out there in the open, and we were talking about scripture and its place in community of Christ. I'm currently a student at Drew Theological School working on my MDiv, and I had to put together a Bible study as a midterm project, and I was able to use that Bible study for our meeting. And we're out there in the open talking about these things, Doctrine and Covenants, Book of Mormon, Holy Bible, and people are walking by us. And so it's a group of four or five of us, and people are walking by and kind of, you know, looking over and seeing what we're doing, what we're talking about. One person afterwards talked to me and asked me what we were doing. And so that, I guess, sparked the idea of thinking, you know, let's keep this out in the open, because there's some folks who may want to be a part of this movement and be interested over time. And where I really challenged the attendees to think about, okay, who would be good that we'd want to bring in? Who do you want to invite? So as far as reaching out to people, that's the primary strategy right now, sticking with this core group and having them invite people in. And as we go and experience, there'll be some people who surface here and there who may be interested in participating going forward. But as far as the actual format of what we do, where we meet, I want to keep that as flexible as possible, because it needs to be that way in a city like New York. If you keep it in the same place, same time, it becomes another Sunday morning, even if it's Thursday night, right? We want to keep it loose and enjoyable. I ask the attendees where they think would be great to meet, just so that they have some, quote unquote, skin in the game, and saying, yeah, you know, I went to this restaurant and it was awesome. I think it would be a great place for us to meet and for us to catch up and dive deeper into our conversation. So it's very fluid. We move around the city. And for me, as a relatively new individual to the New York City area, and as a Lamoni, Iowa graduate, All of this is way over my head. So it's a good experience for me to be in the city, to experience it and the new locations, the new neighborhoods, which is all, it's a blast. So as far as establishing a house church or a working congregation, it's incredibly, the strategy is based on how can we meet, where can we meet, and who can we invite? And out of that, we can start to establish ourselves. I don't have a one-year plan or three-year plan, or we're going to have 18 baptisms in the Hudson River, by the end of 2019. No, that's really not the core objective here. The core objective in my mind is bringing those people into intentional community, whether it's at the Statue of Liberty on a Staten Island ferry. We were able to do that one night. Go out for pizza, or sitting together in a coffee shop, diving into the meaning of scripture and how do we responsibly use it. So it's in its early stages of development. It's taken some time to figure out what is working. To be honest, I had a map on my office wall that had, you know, where I knew certain members were, and I had little cluster groups, and I identified little coffee shops and certain street corners, thinking, okay, this is where we'll have one, we'll have another one in the Bronx, we'll have one in Brooklyn. But I quickly learned that was not the right approach. We need to keep it fluid. That way it keeps some of the excitement of going to new places, but also sharing together, having one member share, this place was awesome for me because I had this experience, and it would be great if you guys went there with me sometime. So we tap into those interests and we allow the relationships to grow. I would love for it to become more active in social justice issues. We had a couple groups march just a couple weeks ago during the National Women's March in New York City, which is really exciting. You look around the city, there's need everywhere. I would love for us to partner with some groups or even start something within ourselves to move this intentional relationship building outside of just each other. So those are kind of some of the long-term thoughts, but right now it's bringing people together and establishing that trust that is so essential going forward.
Being a small town kid as well, I totally understand, going into New York City, and I remember just going into San Francisco and I'm like, everyone knows I'm a farm kid. I just know it. I don't belong here. But so I can kind of understand. I wonder, do you still get a little bit, I'm going to New York City when you go to New York, or are you just over it now? You totally get it.
So funny story. We had a youth group from the Independence area come out on a historic sites visit, and they stayed in our congregation here in Ridgewood. And I took him into the city, and we were able to do some things. We did the World Trade Center sites. We had lunch in the city and pizza in Times Square. But the moment that they came out of the subway underneath Madison Square Garden and they saw the buildings and the traffic and the people, they all just stood there at the edge of the steps in awe, what it seemed like.
Of course they did.
And of course, me as this their little shepherd guy, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, we're blocking traffic that's trying to come up the stairs or down the stairs or whatever, and I'm trying to move them over to the side, like take pictures over here. But that instant of awe is something that I experience every time I come out of the train station underneath Madison Square Garden at Penn Station. It is just so massive in my mind. And, I go in two or three times a month. But every time I feel like one of those senior high students on that trip. Just so overwhelmed.
I 100% understand as well. So I want to go back to, you were talking about your whole goal is to build intentional community. And I am right there with you on building that intentional community, but there is like that pull, isn't there? That to pull you like, well, you know what? I'm working for the church and we're spending church dollars. We need to have some baptisms and we need to do this. Like, I feel there are times when I feel that panic within me.
Right.
And one of the things that I've learned working with people who are learning about who Community of Christ is that people can smell that from a mile away. If that is your only goal is to get baptisms and to, you know, and to have them join this group and give us money, that is never, ever a key to building intentional community, is one thing that I've learned at least. You know, you have to be, there's no agenda except for my agenda is to get to know you and to be your friend and to help you find people that share some sort of commonalities. And so that's what I've learned in here, being here in Utah and building a house church myself. And I feel like that's what you're saying here too.
That's exactly right. And in no way am I trying to take credit for this way of thinking. So forgive me, my church nerd is about to show here, but last week during seminary's focus session, we learned about a trip that a couple missionaries made across Iowa as they tried to bring people together. They weren't in it to proselytize, really. They were trying to find their members. They were trying to bring people together. And out of that, of course, some congregations and baptisms came out of it. But they're just trying to bring people together and saying, hey, the church is here and you're not alone. And that's the exact same model that I'm looking at here in New York City. I'm just trying to bring people together and letting people know, hey, the church is here and you're not alone. President of 70, John White, was kind enough to send a letter out to Mission Center presidents and staff around the country saying, hey, if you have contacts in the New York City area, you know, let Ryan know so that he can, you know, work with them or whatever. And we've had a couple people surface out of that. So we're just trying to bring them together and say, you know what? I know there's been some previous ministry in the area from Community of Christ, but this is something a little bit different. This is something a little bit more modern, maybe more contemporary, if you want to say, because we're not, it's not a hymn sandwich in a coffee shop. It's dwelling in the Word at a coffee shop, and it's walking around together on our way to the coffee shop. It's digesting emotions and feelings, allowing those to process together in a safe, courageous space. And for me, that becomes transformational. We will never see things the same again once we leave that space. And that's what it's about.
Oh, for sure. And you are living your message that you're telling your youth. You've changed the word church into a verb by walking around and by being fluid and meeting in all of these different places and allowing the Spirit to breathe and figuring out, hey, you know, what's the best way to build this community? Is it to rent a building, to sit in chairs and to sing and pray and listen to sermons? You know, that might not be the way to go. And so being, I think, Ryan, it takes a really special person like yourself in order to be able to be that fluid and that open and that, you know, it makes it a lot easier when you have a place to go and chairs and a plan. And so in some ways, so not having any of that stuff makes it, you just have to be a kind of an open, more fluid type person. And I think that you're great for this. It sounds really exciting.
It is. And the number one thing I try to tell people as often as I can is things are going to go wrong, right? Something's going to happen that completely alters the plan, or you're going to try something and then no one's going to show up. But that's part of it. Dare I say, you know, ministry is an experiment. there's no science to it. It's an art. And being okay with, I'm not going to use the word failure because that's not what it is. Being okay with no one showing up on something, that's essential to living missional, because you look at it like, oh, well, that didn't work. Let's try something different. And I continue to have hope as long as people are saying, yeah, let's do something different this time. My heart breaks a little bit when I hear, you know, we tried that and it didn't work, so we might as well not. That's not what we're called to be. Nowhere in, by the stretch of imagination, meeting people's expectations or ministerial needs in January of 2018. We need to continue to find those small conversations that are meaningful, find ways in which we bring that message of joy, hope, love, peace, and radical transformation into the daily lives of others.
We now have a term for that out in Utah about this whole experimentation. It's something Larry McGuire said on the phone to us a long time ago. We're calling it spaghetti ministry. Not eat spaghetti, but because we throw spaghetti against the wall and see what sticks, you know, and if that worked out, that's awesome. If that one didn't, let's move on. Ooh, hey, let's try this one over here. So we are throwing spaghetti against the wall.
That's great. I love that terminology. I'm going to use that. I hope.
Feel free.
I hope he's all right with that. Yeah.
Well, Ryan, I really appreciate you being on the call. I appreciate you sharing your giftedness with us and all of the cool things that are happening on the East Coast. It really makes me want to fly to New York and see what this is all about really bad.
Hey, we would love to have you sometime.
Is there anything that you wish I would have asked you and I didn't, or any final thoughts before we end the podcast?
I just think one of the biggest points that I continue to think about and talk with others on is the idea of integrating wonderful material into congregations. I know that's really, really tough, and I've been there. I was part of the pastoral leadership team that learned these new ideas and spiritual practices and ways of thinking. And it was very, very challenging integrating it into the congregation because everyone walks at a different pace, and that's fine. I don't want people to be discouraged or fearful of integrating these ideas into congregations. Conversation with John White last week reminded me that, you know, Christ didn't meet in churches every Sunday. Christ was walking around with his followers, with his disciples, with crowds, challenging the social norms and expectations. Why shouldn't we be doing the same thing now? So if there's a listener out there thinking about those ways in which they need to integrate, you know, keep doing it. Because the transformation happened at DC and I was a part of it. The transformation's happening here in the Mid-Atlantic Mission Center, and we're reaching people in New York City who would not have been part of this wonderful community had we not decided to live it and to do church.
That's really lovely to hear, and I think really important for our listeners to hear. And a good reminder for me too is that when, you know, God calls, even if you think that does not make any sense at all, we have no money for this, God, that is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Answer the call in creative ways is what God's calling us to do. So thank you for sharing your ministry Absolutely. With us. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
And I hope to have you back someday.
I would love that. Anytime.
Thanks for listening to our new series, What's Brewing? If you have a mission story that you would like to share, please contact us through our website at projectzionpodcast.org.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use, and while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.